You're listening to Pastor Bill Surjack.
One of the little things I keep on my desk is this little tiny statue of a lamb. The sermon reminded me of that because in the book of Revelation, they picture the heavyweight championship of the universe between good and evil. And evil is represented by a gigantic beast with 10 horns, and it's this huge beast. And good is represented by a wounded baby lamb. And it looks like it's going to be a slaughter. And it is. The lamb wins. Good never looks as powerful as evil. But good is the one that is the final championship of the universe. Remember that when you're thinking in terms of what things you choose. Don't always choose the things that are going to look like they're strong and powerful. Choose the things that might not look very strong, but they're good. Because they're the ones that will eventually win out. We do have a battle going on here in the book of Joshua, and this is one with the city of Jericho. This is in the 6th chapter of Joshua, beginning with the 1st verse, the whole 6th chapter. Hear now the word of God. Now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went out, no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times, with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have all the people give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse and the people will go on up, every man straight in." So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priest and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and have 7 priests carry trumpets in front of it." And he ordered the people advance, march around the city with the armed guard going ahead of the Ark of the Lord. When Joshua had spoken to the people, the 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets before the Lord went forward, blowing their trumpets. And the Ark of the Lord's covenant followed them. The armed guard marched ahead of the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard followed the Ark. All this time the trumpets were sounding. But Joshua had commanded the people, "Do not give a war cry. Do not raise your voices. Do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then shout." So he had the Ark of the Lord carried around the city, circling it once. Then the people returned to camp and spent the night there. Joshua got up early the next morning, and the priests took the Ark of the Lord. 7 priests carrying the trumpets went forward, marching before the Ark of the Lord and blowing the trumpets. The armed men went ahead of them, and the rear guard followed the Ark of the Lord while the trumpets kept sounding. So on the 2nd day, they marched around the city once and returned to camp. They did this for 6 days. On the 7th day, they got up at daybreak and marched around the city 7 times in the same manner, except that on that day they circled the city 7 times. The 7th time around, when the priests sounded the trumpet blast, Joshua commanded the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city and all that is in it are to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who were with her in her house shall be spared, because she hid the spies we sent. But keep away from the devoted things, so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it. All the silver and gold and all the articles of bronze and iron are sacred to the Lord and must go in his treasury." When the trumpet sounded, the people shouted, and the sound of the trumpet. When the people gave a loud shout, the wall collapsed. So every man charged straight in, and they took the city. They devoted the city to the Lord and destroyed with the sword every living thing in it. Men and women, young and old, cattle, sheep, and donkeys. Joshua said to the 2 men who had spied out the land, "Go to the prostitute's house and bring her out, and all who belong to her, in accordance with your oath to her." So the young men who had done the spying went in and brought out Rahab, her father and mother and brothers, and all who belonged to her, they brought out their entire family and put them in a place outside the camp of Israel. So they burned the whole city and everything in it. But they put silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord's house. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her, because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho. She lives among the Israelites today. At that time, Joshua pronounced this solemn oath: "Cursed before the Lord is the man who undertakes to rebuild this city. With the cost of his firstborn, he will lay its foundation. With the cost of his youngest, he will set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. Thank God that he has not left us alone to know what he's like, but he's revealed himself in a way that we can understand by becoming a man in the person of Christ, and that revelation is accurately obtained for us. And this is Holy Word. This is the very beginning of the Jews conquering the promised land. And the way they are doing it is something that just doesn't make sense to us in a lot of ways. And I think part of it is because the way we're used to thinking and the way we're accustomed to working and conquering things and beginning to win over things. One of the first things they did was make their whole army vulnerable to attack by having the whole army circumcised. And for several days while they were recovering from the circumcision, just a few soldiers could have come in and conquered the entire army. They did that because they had been people wandering in the wilderness. They had just been wandering around without direction, even forgetting much of what God had told them to do. And so what they were beginning to do is to establish themselves as followers of God's ways. I think that's a good thing for Christians to keep in mind, because a lot of times we spend kind of just sort of wandering around in the wilderness, following every shift of doctrine. As we go back and forth and we pick up the ways of the wilderness that is around us, and we live within that framework in that wilderness. And one of the first things they had to do was to begin to establish God's ways again in their lives. And the first thing that they had to do was to do circumcision, which was the basic seal of all the Jews, even if it meant putting themselves totally vulnerable. Then the next thing they do is also equally strange, as God has told them on this city whose powerfully fortified walls, in the fact that the walls were just practically impenetrable. And so what God tells the people to do is to take the Ark of the Covenant, which was God's presence among the people of Israel, and have the priests carry that and carry it around those walls of that city one time each day for 6 days, and blowing the horn. And then the people, probably a million or so people, just walking silently behind the ark, focusing the reality of God in this land. The last day they were supposed to march around 7 times, blowing the trumpets again. This may have been one of the great worship services of all time, because what they were doing was putting their focus on God. What we usually think of in worship, and I don't know, some of us probably come to worship with being kind of self-conscious. If we look good enough to the people around us, we're concerned about that. Concerned that we might stand up at the wrong time. That would be terrible. Our focus is maybe upon us or upon the people that are sitting around us, and very little of the focus is on God. I think that has happened to us as we've looked back on this battle. But I don't think the Israelites who marched around the city following the Ark of the Covenant had any trouble with who the focus of worship was. The focus of worship was the presence of God. Without the presence of God, no way in the world they were going to be able to conquer Jericho, let alone the rest of the promised land. And so that last day they marched around 7 times the number of God's completeness. And it was finally the worship was complete, and all the sense of the presence of God was complete. It was like the people had taken the presence of God and the Ark of the Covenant and claimed this city and this land by stepping on it and marching around it. And so they then shouted. And the walls, the powerful part of this city, fell down. And as the archaeologists are to be believed, it fell outward to show a sign that it was God who did this. This was very much like if somebody was trying to conquer us, and they started marching around the United States, and then they shouted at the last day with the presence of God, and all of our weapons just suddenly blew up, and they disappeared. And God has the power to do that. God has the power to eliminate every weapon that we've ever made. We think of ourselves as being strong and very powerful. Like as we look at Joshua, we think about Joshua's sword and Joshua's spear. And as I said, that's totally insignificant to the story. The core of the story was the fact was God's power in existence. We like to look at our power because we think that we're probably God. And we don't like to look at God's power because then we will have to be submissive to that power. One of the things that happened here right afterwards is something that probably really bothers us today, because it was a very violent scene. What God had said was to go in to destroy all the people of the city, all the animals, all the way down to the very last thing alive, to completely destroy it. We think of ourselves as very nonviolent people, and we think, we'd never do anything like that. We would never really destroy things like that. Because you see, we're people who have hidden violence. Every year on the farm where I grew up, we had a day for butchering, particularly butchering pigs. There was always kind of a ritual around the time of butchering. And there was a time where we butchered maybe several pigs. We would start off by having to shoot the pigs to kill the pigs. I love the way Garrison Keillor talked about butchering days in one of his stories. One of the things he said was quite true. There was no laughing, there was no joking, there was no horsing around. We realized that we were killing these animals for our food for the winter. And we were participating in the actual violence of it. And it is violent. I grew up watching it. I don't know that I could do it today very well, but I've seen it done enough times I could probably figure it out. And we butchered usually in the winter time so the carcasses could then hang and cool, because they needed to cool before you cut them up. Now, on some Sundays, or some days when we had special people over, Grandma would usually kill one of the chickens and pluck the chickens and cook that for the meal that evening. And again, probably most of us have never participated in that sort of thing. And we would never even think in terms of, like, I wouldn't want to have to do that. I wouldn't want to have to kill an animal. Because, you see, we're used to different ways. When we go buy the meat, it's a meat counter at the grocery store, and it's wrapped in cellophane. There's no sense of violence that we have in being able to do that. Or we pick up our chicken, same place, and there's no sense of having to actually kill the chicken. But, you know, somebody did. It's not as though the violence is not there. It's still there. We call those places where they fix meat slaughterhouses. And there's a sense of a violent thing that is being done there. It's just that we've kind of hidden it, pushed it aside. I don't think our world is any less violent. We've just put up a facade in acting as though it's not so violent. Or we've pushed it into ways that are more acceptable. We look at the people that we read about in the Old Testament, and we read about them sacrificing animals, and we say, what a terrible thing. Those must have been horrid, violent people. Actually, they probably just lived a little closer to the world than we do. Now, I've often wondered why people are so concerned about the fact that those animals are sacrificed. And yet, probably, if you drive down the highway and look at possums, very few of them seem to get across the road. You look at all kinds of animals that are along our highways that are killed every year. And I don't know the statistics, but I would be surprised if maybe on the highways of the United States, more animals are killed each year than were killed by animal sacrifices of people in olden times. But we don't look at that. We cover it up. If we stopped driving cars, a lot more possums would be spared. But we don't really want to give up our cars for that. There's that sense of the reality of violence still there within our world. And it's covered up. We just don't see it. Matter of fact, very few of us even look at the wars that go on or the slaveries that go on in parts of our world and the way people treat with one another around our world. We keep ourselves pretty isolated from that. Doesn't mean it's gone away. There seems to be a sense that God may even be willing to use violence to limit evil. Now, there's one recorded instance in the New Testament of Jesus himself using violence to drive the money changers from the temple, because what they were doing was evil, and Jesus drove them out. There may be a sense where God uses violence even now to limit evil. One day, they'll be able to eliminate the evil. There are some passages in the Bible that talk about beating spears into pruning hooks and swords into plowshares. Also talks about a lion lying down with the lamb. And those are wonderful passages from the book of Isaiah. If you want to read them, they're in Isaiah 2 and Isaiah 11. And we think, well, that's the way we need to work and make our world, so that we eliminate the violence within us. You have to read the whole passage, because we tend to think, well, that's what we have to do. I like what Woody Allen said about the lion lying down with the lamb. He said, the lion shall lie down with the lamb, but the lamb won't get much sleep. We tend to think that we can make this sort of thing happen, but it doesn't happen that way. Read the early part of the second chapter of Isaiah, the early part of the 11th chapter of Isaiah, to set them in the context. What they're talking about there is that all the peoples of the world will fall down and worship God. All the people everywhere will begin to worship the Lord as God and make Him Lord, make Him at the core of their lives. And then God says, in that day, they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. The way to that kind of peace is not through our own instigation. The way to that kind of peace is by beginning to fall down and worship God. As we come into relationship with God through Jesus Christ, Jesus absorbed the violence of this world and the violence of God in order for us to be able to come into relationship to God. It is in that relationship with God that we begin to become new people. If you want to try to eliminate the violence in the church, we have been in our denomination struggling with issues that are verbally violent to one another. I probably would have rather go back and participate in a butchering day back on the farm than going to a couple of meetings that I've had to attend. If we want to begin to bring peace, the way we will do it is to all fall down and call Jesus Christ Lord. And all of us seek together to try to see what God would have us do, rather than trying to have our side in. But look carefully at Jesus being Lord. And it is when that day comes, finally, all the violence that permeates our lives and our world, all the violence will finally go away. Because Jesus will be the Lord of all. As we fall down and worship Him, we will no longer have the violence and the swords, the slaughter, verbally and physically, that we do now. But God will be in control. And Jesus will truly be Lord.